Welcome to Tech at Lunch, the podcast that satisfies your hunger for all things tech while you enjoy your midday meal. So grab your sandwich, tune in, and let's dig in.
Away we go. Hello, I'm Nick.
Hey, I'm John.
And, we don't have Ed this week. He's out celebrating time with family. So, this week we're going to kind of focus in on some more of the scanning stuff, and we're really going to get into scanning applications, say, across industry. So we're going to look at how, scanning or 3D scanning, it can be, any type of scanning for that matter, is used across all facets of industry, maybe from automotive to aeronautical to space to however you want to think about it. So, on that, what are you thinking?
It's hard to focus on a single place, right? The first thing, like if you ask me where is 3D scanning used, I'm almost immediately going to like medical field, right? Like you get X-rays and things like that, but these are all types of scans. The MRI machine is the type of scan. A lot of the medical industry need to see inside you without cutting you open. So they need to be able to do things like that. And they use those, X-ray is a bit of a radiation there. So they use that to be able to see through and kind of see inside of something without taking it apart. Scanning to me, that's like one of the things that, I wasn't in the hospital a lot, but I knew about the hospital enough that there was these big machines that kind of did some of these things. So that's kind of the first thing I go to. I mean, of course, you think if you're in the office, you think about like your big, just that 2D laser scanner, right? But if you think about that on a larger scale, that's kind of like where we're going at. So anything that's using scanning to like recognize like objects, I would say. You think about TSA and the security there. They scan your luggage and stuff like that. Those are a couple of the things that first immediately would pop out to me. Funny enough, the luggage scanners, they're also using a type of machine learning and AI to be able to recognize objects that are inside that scan. So that's even a second layer of innovation or technologies, that are being used there. It's pretty advanced. Sometimes it can be wrong, of course, but that's why machine learning needs a human, right? So just a couple of those things. I think application most of the time, like I think its use instead of like it being used as a part of a process to create something else. But I don't know. What do you think about you mentioned earlier to me? I think we've talked about it a few times in automotive. Some scanning applications.
Yeah, there's definitely the engineering based side of the house where you want to scan a part to make sure you have a flush fit, make sure it's reproducible, make sure that if you break something or something breaks, it can be repaired. You have SEMA, for instance. SEMA brings in part of SEMA Garage and brings in all these parts and pieces and vehicles and scans them with a ferro arm. Then they take that ferro arm data and they make it available to each one of their members so they can use it for product design based on your CAD, software. You brought up a lot of stuff with Homeland Security, which mm-hmm. my background comes from that world. Think about when you start talking about the actual people scanners in the airport. The actual people scanners in the airport are able to, see through material, and they actually it's targeting, certain material that is used to make, explosives, weapons, or whatever. Main reason why you can't go on one of those machines when you have a pacemaker or, any type of metal, because it'll pick it up and give you a false reading. It also does flag potential hotspots, for further investigation, that is. And then you start having a lot of times now where they're using ground penetration radar to map voids. They're mapping voids in the air and in the ground and stuff like that. And sometimes you have, where they're using them for like explosive ordnance disposal, and they're looking to see if there is, possible ordnance in the ground, if there's a cavern or something like that that they're looking for. You see a lot of it now in a lot of the archaeology when it comes down to like Egypt and stuff like that.
So you could tell if a bomb has exploded, is a dud, or
Pretty
I guess
much.
what stage of the bomb. Yeah. Oh wow. I mean,
Yeah, it's
I...
pretty much buried where it's at. They will scan it to see what parts are in it.
Okay. And oh well, that makes sense. I mean, a lot of the AI and the scans and stuff like that, it kind of it needs the human touch, but it's still. It's more than you could see with your own eyes, right? Like you would need some type of assistance to be able to see that, or you're gonna go into a situation where you don't want to be in, right? So,
Right.
I mean, yeah, there's a whole bunch of applications of scanning in I would say a lot of aeronautics as well. I mean, we talk aeronautics or aerospace, honestly, because they're both kind of combined together, right? The most recent moon lander did use a AI and some kind of scanning to scan the surface of the moon to try and land. This is also another example of it probably needed a little bit of a human touch. That's how we landed the first time.
Yeah, true.
So yeah, I mean, Neil Armstrong needed to land on the moon manually. We showed exactly. We're kind of unfortunately at the same place, but with more fancier, gadgets and gizmos. But we still kind of need to have a human's touch to be able to land that. So it
Yeah,
makes
it's
it
the
very curious.
anti-cratering technology.
Yeah, it makes me curious for the Artemis missions,
Ooh, yeah, that's gonna be a fun one.
right?
Because they're
Because
supposed to map
yeah.
everything.
This feels, I mean, they're definitely going to be a whole lot more prepared for the Artemis mission because they're going to do a loop around the moon. Artemis 2 hasn't even launched. Artemis 3 is going to come through. And this, for anybody who doesn't know, is NASA's next attempt at a moon landing and putting some people on the moon. So it's pretty groundbreaking. It's been 50 years since we've done it. Should be easy, but it's been 50 years since we've done it, so
Right.
it's scary.
It's the one thing that kind of makes me wonder is mapping the dark side of the moon. Usually when we start doing scanning and some of that, we're really worried about refractory, something coming back. If we're scanning the dark side of the moon, there's nothing there to reflect. There's no daylight, which may make it easier.
That's tough. I think it's got to use a couple of different scans. I
And
think there's still got to be some type of temperature, huh? Right?
yeah, and thing is, the scanners sometimes don't like grays and whites and stuff like that, so
Oh yeah,
you
that's fair.
not like we could put a coating on the moon to help with the scanning. It's kind of built in.
People would then complain that you're polluting the atmosphere.
And it's not our atmosphere neither. I mean, it's what they're going to complain
Yeah.
about the most. We'll figure.
So, I mean, to be honest with you, it makes sense. I think we're gonna do a very good scan of it. If you like, you're absolutely right. LiDAR is low light detection. So the reason the dark side of the moon is dark, and for anybody who's curious who doesn't know about it, it's how it rotates around Earth in correspondence with how the Earth is rotating and orbiting around the Sun. It always manages to stay on the dark side. There's not going to be too many chances. I bet the Sun will hit it a couple times, but you think about how fast it spins, it doesn't spin.
Right.
So yeah, it's tough. It's about those two orbits and how those times correspond, which means there's a not really a cyclical cyclical well no there's a cyclical pattern, but it's like the waxing and waning crescents, you know, things like that. But you still there's still the dark side of the moon is away from us, so
It should get interesting.
curious. I'm curious. Yeah, that'd be something that I would want to kind of see more of, because I know we're doing this Parker Solar Probe, and that's using a different type of scanning, not like 3D scanning of the environment. It's got a whole bunch of other sensors and things like that to sort of take measurements and recordings at the sun, which, by the way, is a couple million degrees easily.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, man. I
Something
don't know
about a
how they made
burning
something last
star, you
that.
know.
Yeah, right. Funny enough, though, the corona actually is hotter than they were measuring, and they said it's actually the hottest part of the sun. Well, that besides the, of course, probably the core, but as they descended or got more readings, they got cooler, and those were the sunspots and stuff like that.
And no, it's just funny because the solar flares is what wreaks holy havoc on everything.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, it's also, you know, when we start really thinking about, you know, other types of scanning is bringing it into the automotive world, where we're using it for NDE, a non-destructive examination. Where we're checking weld spots, we're checking materials and stuff like that to make sure that there's no breaks in the weld spots that could cause, you know, issues later. You know, and no, Boeing, this does not help you with bolts.
You
So
still have to tighten them.
yeah, and it won't tell you if they're tight or not. Just throwing that out there. But NDE is used in all facets of production, you know, not just automotive, to check, you know, materials and stuff like that, check weld data, and actually see if you have a tight bond between two mating surfaces. So it's always one way of doing something.
Yeah, one thing I will say about the Boeing situation, I know I've been, it's something to like think about. The it's difficult to, well, you can torque it the first time, but the specification has to be so perfect to think about vibrations. Like vibrations will, and while flying, you know, if you get turbulence and things like that, can take bolts and loosen them off. So, I mean, the situation that they found there is definitely very different. The door plugs is something that should probably even be checked more often. But then it leaves the question, is it like a quality upkeep, or is it an initial quality issue, right?
Right, I can agree with that.
So, but that's just that'll be all I kind of go on that rabbit hole, because it just makes you think. Because if there, what if there was a way to scan, you could, I don't know, scan the scan a plane when it like docks, and I don't know, check the bolts, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. If you think about it, you know, if you can scan the structure before and then at every interval, maintenance interval, you can see if things have expanded, contracted, became oblong due to over torquing, or, you know, had compression issues. If you think about it, we're talking about aluminum here. Aluminum in itself work hardens, so things break. Also, you know, aluminum, it is also, you know, and inherently it kind of expands and contracts with itself and can be easily, you know, bored out if it's, you know, over tightened or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, if you can use a scan to scan an airplane and say, okay, cool, you know, this is what your fixture looks like, you know, at build. Here's your fixture at first interval maintenance. Let's compare these two. Are they off or not? Here's your third one compared to what it left as it left the factory. So you're always going back to the, you know, the OE specs. So you can actually see if things have became oblong, if things have became warped or twisted or something like that. So it could be an easy way of, adding that to, to a function. It's the same thing we talked about wings. You start dealing with, takeoff and landing forces that actually bend the wing portions. That's why they have to pull them off whenever they do maintenance intervals to check the bolts and replace the bolts in the wings to make sure they haven't completely sheared or bent completely out of proportion because of all the landing forces.
Well, that makes sense because it's a lot of force. It's a lot of weight. I mean, there's a reason that there's bag limits. I mean, there's a reason that sometimes they'll say, "Hey, we'll send this on the next flight. Like, it's not coming with this flight." So, yeah, I think it's pretty cool it would be cool to have an application that was able to do that. I mean, it's pretty difficult because the planes come in all shapes and sizes, so it'd need to be universal, right? But some quality check, I think we all could agree is probably best after probably more often. I mean, than they do now. They have a whole bunch of, I know they have regulations and things like that, but you think about the interval that they've got to take and probably lessen it.
Yeah, and if you think about it, most of the teardowns when they do maintenance intervals, they gut the airplane back again. So they gut it back down to steel and then, start the process all over again, rebuild it. So, it happens every so often, especially when they do like engine rebuilds and teardowns and stuff like that.
Makes
Even
sense.
if you had a scanner, a globe scanner, as you're sending it down through the inside of the airplane, it could be scanning and pulling measurements from, assigned spots. And then any safety relevant areas, you do a handheld scan and then get your measurements, map them all together, and then boom. Now you have a CAD catalog for maintenance.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. I mean, and to be honest, we could go even one step further. If you had that type of catalog and you had those types of scans, it would be really cool to have that available to, I guess, work with for a lot of the maintenance team then. So they could even take in and use samples and train with it. So yeah, I mean, iron sharpens iron. You just keep looking at some of the things and you keep working on trying to, get to a certain point where there's never ever a quality issue.
Yeah,
And I
that's
think that
when.
training is one of the huge pitfalls for a lot of people.
Yeah, and like you said with the training type of stuff, you can always take all that data and load it into AR and VR headsets. And now you're able to work on an airplane or walk through an airplane looking at the different, functional areas that you need to be worried about looking at during inspection, without even going in the airplane before it even lands. You can go through the same exact airplane that you're getting ready to pull apart and check areas that were at one point brand new.
Yeah, you could probably get well, at a certain point hand scanning makes sense, but if you can get it to be attached to each plane and so that you can make it per spec as well, it would be pretty cool because maybe they could even take and have you can be sending data down to your arriving airport or that maintenance team can kind of check out what's going on before you even land.
Exactly.
'Cause don't they just go back up right after they get down anyways? You refuel and they're gone again.
Yeah, most of the time. Either that or brought into maintenance if they're there overnight.
Yeah.
It's funny because we spend all this time and energy. Like for example, when I was in the Marine Corps, you built these little sand things, sand maps and terrain maps. And you actually mapped out like an assaulting force and stuff like that. And you kind of mapped out these stuff like that. You always see this stuff where people talk about, do we when the hit on Bin Laden happened, they mapped out this dude's house down to the door hinges, down to people playing in the yard. And we can't, and so we can't, we haven't been able to do that yet for a lot of this training that we want to have. It's time that we take the stuff we've put into practice for hundreds of years, within, the military and bring it into the civilian world where it's like, hey, guess what? We're going to make this as realistic as we possibly can Where when you get in that situation, it's the same exact thing all over again.
Yeah, I mean, to me that makes complete sense, right? You want to practice how you're going to perform, right? But
Exactly.
what's better than actual data, right? I
Well,
mean,
data
it
is the
only
new
builds
oil.
confidence. Yeah, that's true. I mean, because if you have that information, then you have, I wouldn't say utter control, but you are, I wouldn't say 95% prepared. And if we're prepared for something, usually we're able to stop a lot of situations before they get too bad.
Right. That's why we do exercises and everything else. You run people through tabletop exercises for the cybersecurity side of the house.
But we could probably go down this training rabbit hole quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
I'm probably going to take a left turn here for you and kind of put a question onto your side. So we're still talking about kind of focusing on the core theme of the 3D scanning, right? So what about, we've talked about ConAg before and construction agriculture. I mean, we 3D print giant houses. We use scanning in all types of farming. Like, what would be some of the uses that you think of in ConAg, for 3D scanning?
Honestly, I would think, terrain scanning would definitely be something that I could see beneficial, especially for somebody who is buying new land. They can, have a company go out and do an ag scan of their property, scan it from front to back to front, and actually give you a terrain map. You know where the water is running, you know where the hills are, you know where you're going to have problems getting equipment back into. So, they know their worth of the property before they even farm it. I think that, aerial scanning of properties is probably one of the biggest innovations in, in ConAg, outside of the, I guess you could say outside the concrete 3D printer.
Right.
What do you think?
Right. I mean, honestly, so I'm thinking about it as part of the process. I've been kind of trying to force myself to think about that, as opposed to being the thing that's performing and everyone's focused on. You kind of touched the point that I was like thinking about. You kind of took it at a different angle. I didn't realize or think about terrain scanning to see what soil's like or something like that. I mean, you could probably only look to a certain point of topsoil, but if you have some type of scanner, drone, or plane, or something, you could with a bit more of a penetrating scan, that you could see a little bit more into the consistency. That's a crazy idea that. It just makes economical sense, right? Why plant something before I know that this is going to be, a fruitful harvest, right? I don't want to waste my seed. Maybe I go with a different plant that can do with less water. It doesn't look damp. Things like that. That's a great idea. For me, I'm thinking about the guy in the tractor and what his life's like in that tractor. How much that, like we talked about it a while back with John Deere and their firmware debacle. They needing like a guy with a laptop to come fix your tractor when you can't work on it yourself. You know what the problem is, but if the firmware is what's the problem. So I'm thinking about him scanning his field, being able to plot out a course, being able to use his tractor to harvest, to plant, whatever the case may be, but to be the human manual emergency stop, for lack of a better term, right? He could say, oh, hold on, somebody's in my field, I need to stop. You don't really want to just they're giant machines, let those things go free without anybody able to kind of pull a cord and stop them in their tracks. So I think his life is a whole bunch easier, and it probably is a lot more efficient, right? But yeah, scanning in that sense, I really don't have too many crazy ideas except for that farm bot that the 3D printer or it wasn't a 3D printer, it was using AI to scan and de-weed like small 3x3 or something like that plots of potting soil or things like that, planters. But if you could do something like that with a large scale and make it modular, I mean, I think the efficiency is the goal, and sustainability as well. And you could stack those on top of each other if you can get a certain plant to grow without as much sunlight. And now you've got a farm tower, which takes less land, less of a footprint, so feeds more people.
And speaking of the ConAg stuff, I saw something, the other day. It's a John Deere product, don't get me wrong, and it's part of, I saw it on YouTube. They were talking about, farming this dude's land, and it was a combine. This combine has sensors in it that when you map it out, it's via GPS, and you map out your property lines, and you pretty much hit a button, you say go. This it will self-drive, like you said, the tractor, around the plot. Farmers literally are listening to music, but it gives you the makeup of the corn that you're bringing in, and tells you, okay, cool, you've taken in this amount of this type of product, this amount of this type of product, and you can actually figure out your yield while your this combine's going through the cornfields. And it's all GPS controlled. It's all, by LiDAR scanning to tell you where you're at, stuff like that, based on GPS coordinates. So, the amount of technology and, not just scanning technology, GPS technology, GPS triangulation that they're putting into those machines, and especially into the hardware, is absolutely insane. It's what I call farm tech. You've gone from being the farmer that everybody thinks about to being the high-tech farmer, to being a farmer who is now a sysadmin.
Yeah, he's just hanging out, making sure nothing goes crazy. And if something goes crazy, he can hit the button to say, "Oh God, please stop."
It's finally time for, the computer nerds to get into farming.
I just think about the farmer who's been doing it for 40 years, and you got a new tractor, and he's like calling for help, and they send out a maintenance. They get a maintenance technician out to you, and it's just like a nerd with his laptop coming out, and he's like, "Oh no."
Do a pocket protector and freaking a little bit of
Yeah.
suspenders.
It looks like you sent me an accountant. What are you
You
doing?
sent me Urkel.
Yeah, he just comes in with a USB drive, plugs it in, and he downloads the firmware, and you're good.
It's crazy. It's like we've talked about with the manufacturing facilities. We've gone away from the date of the wrench banger. We have headed to the world of everybody's a computer tech.
Yeah.
Scary, but true. I've
I
seen
mean,
some of these people with computers.
the more one you are with your computer, the more connected you are to the internet. It's the more connected you are with the rest of reality, and connected you are to the entire, like, everybody who has access to the internet's knowledge, for better or for worse, of course. Some have more knowledge, some have less, some have incorrect knowledge, some have correct knowledge. Please vet your sources. But at the end of the day, if you have the computer, if you could use the computer and make it do what you want it to, like, you're just it's that much better a tool than a notebook and a piece of paper, but can be used. I mean, you could be as good with a notebook and a pen than a computer, but it just makes everything instantaneous almost.
It's funny that, years ago we sent a man to the moon with even just as an orbit for the first time with a piece of paper, a pencil, and a slide ruler. And they said, cool, figure it out. Now we fix million-dollar equipment with an HP. And you leave the wrench at home because you might not need it. And the one thing that kind of, and I know we're diving off topic here, but it worries me, is that I hope that the guys they send out to prepare some of this equipment, even though they are you know, the nerds of the farming generation, that they know how to actually work on the equipment and just not on the software. And don't force these farmers who have work to do and money to make to have to call somebody else out to fix it. But that's a different rant for a totally different time.
Well, it just makes too much sense for corporate America, you know?
Yeah, that is true. Very true.
But
Valid
you know
point.
it, but it makes sense. If you if I mean we all hear about hunger and things like that, and trying to be able to produce more, give more, make things cheaper. If you can make more of this product, you think about the materials, the resources. If I can make more wheat, then I can make more things from wheat, right? I can make more of the products that need to be processed endlessly, right? So it just makes food more abundantly available to the population as well. So it's just good for humanity. But if we could make it easier for the farmer, I mean, I'm not saying that we give them all the money, but we need to line their pocket a little bit. I mean, they're doing a lot of hard work to make sure that a lot of people get fed, so.
So now I'm going to propose a question. What industry do you think that has not been, I guess you'd say, massaged or at least been impacted in a way it should be by scanning and stuff like that?
So you mean something that didn't do that hasn't done well enough from scanning?
Or something, one that hasn't been, I guess you'd say, massaged enough, or one that, we haven't seen scanning impact yet that it probably should.
Man, it's hard for me not to think about dentistry and stuff like that. Because like the only there's probably many more applications. That's one thing. I think about one of our coworkers had got Invisaligns, and they had to do some probably they did some type of molding of his teeth. But if you could scan, then you can make Invisaligns endlessly, right? It makes sense to me. Oh man, I think I lost it. There's a few things. It's just so many things that scanning touches. Like if it's got 3D rendering or 3D sculpture. Oh, here it is. AR and retail. How much of an innovation was it when Amazon added the see it in your room feature, right? That means that they needed to scan that into their system or create some type of file to be able to implement in your room in almost the precise dimensions of that item, so that you could say, oh, maybe this couch doesn't fit in my house. I can't get this through the door, probably. It's a little bit bigger than I thought. I thought it was a couple pieces. Stuff like that. You can see if it fits. You can see if it makes sense. You can see if it even looks good. Retail stores are starting to, right now, it just started with pictures and stuff like that, but they're starting to go to that kind of idea whenever they make their online shop. What does it look like in my house? Because they want you to see what it looks like so you can, purchase with confidence. And I think that's a lot of the issue with some of the hesitation purchases or non-purchases, I should say. So retail, I can think of a couple ways that it was touched, but I don't think that it's probably used to its full capacity. I mean, you probably think about the AP or the asset protection, like the guard usually at Best Buy, it's the guy in the front in the different color, like he's usually in a different colored shirt than the rest, but he's making sure that all their assets or all their items are where they should be. And that person having some type of scanner or cameras around and some communication are able to stop a lot of theft. Now, right now we're also going through a huge organized crime kind of ordeal in many places in America. But at the end of the day, we've got to be able to use some of this type of scanning a little bit better to see some things. And I think we're progressing enough to get to a point where it's like that, but it's probably very expensive, which is why it doesn't get implemented as much, right? And a lot of places, I think, don't allow facial scanning. A lot of people are upset about facial recognition and things like that. So a lot of those got outlawed by use from even the police and some of the retail places. So it's difficult to be able to control those things. But I think that that's a good use or a good application of scanning. It just is difficult to implement, you know?
Definitely makes sense. I don't think I'd ever think of,
There's got to be
retail.
something.
Yeah.
There's got to be some way. Right now they're operating off of magnets and sensors.
Well, there's, like you said, who knows, the next thing we're gonna, we'll implement the TSA at, some of these places, at least with their scanning, so you can actually see if somebody's walking out with something that wasn't paid for or whatnot, Or sooner or later, we'll go to, hey, everything's a hologram.
Yeah, we'll bring it out from the back when you pay for it first.
Right. Like
Yeah.
shoes. You get these
No, that would
$200
be a
Jordans. It's here. You
yeah.
can see it in the picture. If you want me to bring that out so you can try that on, I'll bring them out for you. I'm not going to put them out here right here in front of you.
That'd be a cool. Yeah, that'd be a cool one. Another thing. You got me thinking about shoes, like you're thinking about holograms and stuff like that. What if I could scan your foot and make sure the shoe fits before you just pick the shoe and I scan your foot and I bring your size? We already know what it is or what it should be.
Yeah, that would work.
That would make things so much quicker in a lot of situations. I mean, how many times do you I mean, I worked in retail, so it was a lot more for me. They're like, "Oh yeah, can I get these fit differently? Can I get this certain size?" What if you didn't have to make that decision?
I worked at Advanced Auto. I had the same problem with people trying to buy brake pads.
That's true. That's true. I am personally one person who has bought incorrect parts for their car, so yeah. It'd be nice to know in advance.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Or scan it and maybe somehow have a machine that re can replicate it, right?
Yeah, that too. It's like, when I think about that, when I think about that same question, I'm thinking the transportation industry. I'm thinking trucking.
Okay.
I'm thinking, shipping.
Oh
Maybe not
man.
on the Maersk. But
Careful.
I'm thinking of the unused space we have in some of these Connex boxes, and some of these these tractors that are either unused or that can be used more efficiently based on weight requirements that need to happen. If you go in there and you scan the inside of a truck, you can actually see how you can lay out that truck for better packing. And now you don't have to send two trucks to one location. You send one truck that's packed better.
Yeah.
It's, it's shipping optimization. Because, I also worked at Big Lots, and I can tell you every time we got our truck in, because I was on truck crew, that thing came in like a, not very good.
They
And
gotta
we weren't
like
on the end
Saran
of,
wrap everything.
right, well, if that. And we weren't at the end of the line either. So we were, I think, first, and we had our own truck, our own dedicated truck, and it was a just a complete hodgepodge. Nothing was organized. Nothing in the truck was organized at all. And it's like there's so many things that can be done with these trucks to make them more organized, better use, get them in and out quicker because your pallets are organized, so you can just yank the pallets off and go. If you knew that your truck was showing up with this pallet organization, you can tell, okay, cool, I need two forklifts to clear this entire truck. Two forklifts and two pallet jacks, four men, and two and a set of forklifts. You can get that driver in and out of that dock faster. And then you can get your product onto your floors faster than what it would have been if it's like, hey, I got another truck coming because things weren't adequately put where they're supposed to be on this truck. And the part, and also if you have parts that people are waiting for that are in the back of the truck, far end, you know how long it's going to take you to get that out.
Yeah, space optimization.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's probably a lot easier, better at analyzing depth and things like that. So, I mean, supply chain definitely needs the most kind of focus, and it needs the most like innovation, because it's, if you're getting your, we can't make anything without the resources, right? So if
Right.
we don't have the resources here, we need to get them imported. So if I can make my supply chain more efficient, I can get my resources that much quicker. I can make the thing I want to make that much quicker. I can, you know, use it, you know, pass it on. It goes, gets built into another thing, whatever the case may be. But if I'm able to be, get these products in quicker and more efficiently, then we don't have to ship as much. I mean, trains are getting ridiculously long, and cargo ships are already monstrosities. They're giant boats. So it would be nice to be able to kind of decrease that, but I know it's going to be difficult as we grow as a population to decrease any of those things. So that just means we need much more innovation.
And that's where we get to, with that, like something like mine on demand. Like if we're having to do salt mining, sulfur mining and stuff like that, why mine 24/7? If if you have a if your supplier is saying, hey, guess what? I'm running low, go ahead and mine more. Why have more sitting on the side that you don't already need? I understand the salt can't go bad. I get it. But the thing is, why only mine some why mine more than you're going to consume in that short period of time?
Yeah, I mean, there is a point to it as well, because if you're overdoing it, then you run out that much quicker, right? And the overuse of it, if something sits a little bit, some resources can't don't maintain their properties when they wait. So like if you're, you know, or it adds process to the post, it adds time to your post processing afterwards. So if you, it gives it a lot more time for contaminants to get to it. If it sits off to the side, it gives a lot more time for things to go wrong, you know.
Right.
So
And it's just this stuff that they can definitely work through and scan through and stuff like that. It's like if you can get say a deep penetrating radar and a scanner and go through what some of these coal mines, you can see kind of hey, how much is left? Do we need to keep going? Do we need to go deeper? Do we need to have another mine? How much is left over? Do I need, and so you don't have to build these strip mines, where you take the entire top level of soil out. You're not, digging, man-made lakes.
Yeah, I mean, we have to do it for lithium. It's
Yeah.
tough. So it might be making it might make things a lot easier, because these metals have certain densities, you know? And
Right.
you can scan for them. You can so you can use scanning to see what these where these metals are at a little bit easier, and then you can know how much of it you need if you're scanning where you're producing.
Exactly.
So yeah.
But, who knows? We'll
I
see.
also yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I wanted to kind of bring something up that I didn't really talk as much about earlier. I said medical and scanning and things like that. I looked up some things earlier. We kind of talk about it quite a bit, prosthetics and stuff like that, implants and things, surgical guides and stuff like that. If I'm able to make those examples, I think it applied. We mentioned it earlier with scanning and the aircraft and being able to work on it and stuff like that. Scanning a person and being able to see that's something that's very useful. But you want to think about what revolutionized like casts and orthopedics, stuff like that. If you could scan the arm and see and create a 3D print of your cast, right? That you're using two things that make it a lot better, a lot more clean. Because what's the biggest problem that have you ever had a cast or you broken a bone?
No, I had surgery, but they didn't have me in a cast or anything like that.
Oh, lucky you, sir. Well, I broke my wrist and I broke my left arm or my left wrist, and both needed a cast. So I had a cast. The first time when I broke it at almost at the shoulder, it was a fracture. They casted my whole arm up to half. I kind of had like a right angle going up half my elbow. That was terrible, by the way, not moving your arm for a long time. But the hygiene of it was kind of the worst part for me. It's cloth and things like that. Of course, it hardens, but after so long, you need to be able to wash that out or clean it, right? But you couldn't do that. Otherwise, it would sit there and it would get nasty. If you could 3D print something that was a little bit better to be in the shower and still maintain structure, how game changing would that be for me? I mean, I had to wrap it in like a plastic wrap every time, or put a trash bag on my left arm when I wanted to go take a shower.
Yeah, and I think that's where we start getting into, plastics and material science also. And you
Oh
start
yeah.
getting into the, was it hydro or the medical grade printing, where, they don't absorb or deabsorb any chemicals or smells or
Right.
anything like that.
You get into like implants and stuff like that. So like, we hear about this all the time. Someone gets a steel plate put in somewhere. Maybe like you have steel plate bolting some of your bones together. We saw it at last year's Rapid. There was I think a company making like 3D printing the structure of the skull, so that when you could surgically have an implant to where it would form the rest of your head there, right? So scanning and printing, a lot of the times, probably in industry going forward, are going to come hand in hand, right?
Yeah, because Form Labs is also the one who had the that the one that you're talking about is Form Labs, and Form Labs had the has a resin that they can use for like cranial implants and stuff like that, like
I think they
cranial
call
mesh.
it, what was it, biocompatible,
Yeah, something like
right?
that. It's crazy.
I might be wrong, but sounds right. Biocompatible. Yeah, what about like even scanning your teeth and 3D printing a crown for you? Like that's so much more useful than the current process, which is they're molding it as they go, right?
Yeah, can see that.
So yeah, and it probably helps with efficiency and even showing you what's happening to your teeth or anything like that. So I don't know, seeing is believing for me.
It's like the 3D scanned ultrasounds now. So they can technically see the baby in 3D before the baby is in 3D.
Now.
Yeah. So, it's I guess you'd see it before you get it or something like that, or it's like a see-through package.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
That's
I
pretty
know
cool.
some family members who had that done, so it's
Yeah,
weird.
it's pretty cool. I mean, it's innovative to think about. We're always talking about scan this thing, or scan this engine part, or scan this plane part, or scan this like automotive or tool or whatever, this model. But we're not thinking about like scanning a person and doing and using it that way. I mean, there's a reason why we're not doctors. We didn't go in that direction, right?
Right.
We're curious about the machine more than the person.
Yeah, true.
I mean, to an extent, but it's something that we can do and we've done for, a couple decades now, right? Which is impressive in and of itself.
It makes cadavers, like, we do a lot of they do a lot of training on cadavers. People who donate themselves to science for use in God knows what. But with scanning, you kind of remove the need for people to, donate themselves. It's, kind of when it goes, the dude, next thing you know it, your entire body is now on display in some museum and all you are is a skeleton or it's a skin removed thing. Now, let's just put that into freaking AR and we'll call it good from there.
Gonna say that's some nightmare fuel right there.
Right. Yeah, but it's in a museum someplace.
Yeah, right. They told me this was the wax museum.
Yeah, definitely not.
No, but yeah, no. If you could have your scan input and it saves your physical self at that moment in time, I think that's a pretty cool thing to have. I mean, with your scanner, we're gonna eventually scan each other. I'm gonna ask for it. So,
See if we can find get you the print that you're hoping for from Rapid.
yeah, I'll even put my shirt on, the Vulcanar shirt as well, just to make sure it's the same. Like,
I'll have to order one of the little tabletop things.
we can make one, or I'll just slowly spin in place.
Chop your feet, chop your feet, chop your feet.
Right. Quick feet, quick feet. But yeah, no, I think that it would be cool to scan, and I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's used quite a bit in the medical industry. And I think that the medical industry might have been one of the first ones to use it at this at the scale that it's using it now. But yeah, dental and farming, all these other industries, they benefited from the 3D scanner. We're just now getting to a consumable or a consumer size, like just the scanner. Most of the time, it's built into a lot of other machines.
Right. And, I think we're also finally seeing it move into the museum and artifactory, side of the house where people are using it to, catalog historical items and
I was gonna
historical
say, yeah.
areas.
We talked about reverse engineering a while back, and that's something too, is like you can reverse engineer Leonardo's inventions, right? Da Vinci's
Yeah.
inventions. Well, even Tesla, if you're crazy enough.
Yeah, we finally bring things to life. Or not really, well, back to life, I guess.
Now we're Frankenstein, got it.
Yeah, well, when you start reverse engineering, I don't know, the USS Enterprise,
Yeah.
from Star Trek, then
Somebody's gotta.
we may have some different conversations.
Yeah, no, it'd be
So,
pretty fun though. But
yep.
yeah, no, scanning's gonna push us. I mean, if I had to break it down, like its utility is the most important. Like it can be applied to so many different aspects and give so much more. It's just a way to it's a tool to get more information. I mean, you said it best, data is the new oil. So if I get that information and use it, act on it, make a change, it's just for the best, right? More efficient.
Yeah, exactly. But, I think before we go too far, I think that brings us to an end this week. I really, think we hit a lot of good topics and stuff like that. And I think that, it gave us just not a lot to think about, but gave everybody else a lot to think about. Think about how, whatever industry you work in, how scanning can impact that industry, how it can make it better. How it could actually support the workforce, how it can make the day-to-day just, that much better. I want to say thank you to everybody who's tuned in, listened to us. We're at, 2,296 all-time downloads from, across the globe, from places where we may not have, listeners in the past. We 100% appreciate that. Go take a look at, all of our social media stuff. Go take a look at Vulcanar Technology Solutions on YouTube. Look for some new stuff coming, maybe some more, play stuff that we're doing, joking around, having a good time. And you're gonna see some stuff come from Automate, next couple months. So stand by for that. You'll have a little bit of fun with it. From my side, go take a look at, the Printed Heritage and the blog. If you have any ideas or anything, just let us know. So, with that, I say thank you, and I'll turn it over to you, Champ.
Yeah, I always echo what Nick says. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We talk about this all day, so we're always kind of learning a little bit new stuff about it, about different topics and all that stuff. So we're always constantly trying to see what's pretty cool or new. So it's nice to have a platform that kind of also relays some of that information and knowledge to you guys. I think knowledge is definitely power, so we have to kind of make sure we don't lose sight of of the fact that, knowledge for the sake of knowledge is important too. So, I've said it before, try to check out some scholarly articles. Like, if you have something you want us to chat about, send us an article, we'll do some research. I don't mind doing a little bit of research. I mean, Nick, I feel like he doesn't mind because that madman's in school for a doctorate and all he's doing is research. So yeah, we definitely wouldn't mind. Check out, Printed Heritage and Vulcanar.com, the blog, things like that. And yeah, reach out if you want, if you're interested in anything or have anything you want us to chat about. You don't even have to input. If you want us to focus on it, use it as a topic, totally fine. But yeah, I think scanning's pretty, it's pretty cool, and I think we'll have a few more topics that we'll keep kind of touching this side of the house. But yeah, stay tuned for what comes next.
All right, y'all. Have a good one.
Take care.
That's all for this episode of Tech at Lunch. Thanks for tuning in and joining us for this tech-filled lunch break. We hope you enjoy the show, and don't forget to subscribe on all channels. And also, you can find us on YouTube under Vulcanar Technology Solutions. And join us for our next episode, which gets published every Wednesday at 8 a.m. All right, y'all. Have a good one. See you later.